Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. This is episode 331 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in today's podcast, we're going to be talking about lung cancer. We're going to be talking about lung cancer. Again, for those of you that are taking, I know that August is a very busy month with many people taking their USMLE exams. So if you plan to take your USMLE Step 2 CQ Step 3 exams within this month, I do have courses coming up next week. I have an MBME test taking strategies course taking place on the 12th of August. It's going to be from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we'll basically use a bunch of questions and go over some very tried and true MBME test taking strategies. Again, I've had tons of people take this course and they've done extremely well on the exams. And we talk about how to answer ethics questions, how to answer questions even where you don't fully know the content of the question, right? So again, it's a very tried and true course and you'll learn again very systematic means of taking these MBME exams. Now, the second thing is between the 13th and the 14th, we have a review course. It's going to be 10 hours each day, basically on the 13th, which is a Friday, and on the 14th, which is a Saturday. And essentially what we're going to be doing is we're going to be reviewing peds, surgery, IM, OB-GYN, psych, neuro, ethics, biostatistics, communications, right, professionalism, healthcare systems, quality and safety. So review all those things, review about 1700 concepts within those 2 days. Again, I've had many people take the course. In fact, I've had people like literally they took the course I held last weekend and they took the exams as recently as like yesterday and they found it to be extremely, extremely helpful. So again, many people have attended these courses, done really well with it. So if it's something you're interested in, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll be more than happy to give you some more information. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump right into lung cancer, right? So we know that lung cancer is a really bad kind of cancer. I mean, like whenever a person has lung cancer, it's not always the best thing in the world, right? So we know that lung cancer, many times, what are some classic things? The thing is, it's just one of these topics you know you're going to see on your exam, but it's something you kind of need to pay attention to, right? So what are some key things you want to keep in mind with lung cancer? Well, I would say the first thing is kind of like epidemiology, right? I don't know why that word is kind of hard to pronounce sometimes for me, right? But basically, remember that lung cancer is the most common cancer that causes death, right? It's the leading cancer cause of death. And that will obviously make sense, right? Because it's very deadly when it happens. I mean, the 5-year survival in general for most lung cancers is around like, is less than 20%, just in general, right? So lung cancer is bad, right? Lung cancer is bad. And the thing is, lung cancer, though, is not the most common cancer, right? So remember, in men, right, prostate cancer is way more common than lung cancer. In women, breast cancer is way more common than lung cancer. But again, those cancers are not as deadly as lung cancer, right? So if a person has lung cancer, they're probably going to die from it, right? And what are some risk factors for lung cancer, right? So some risk factors, obviously, the big one to keep in mind is smoking. Smoking is the biggest risk factor for lung cancer, right? But again, remember, smoking is not the only risk factor for lung cancer, right? So if, for example, they give you a question about a person that has worked at like a nuclear power plant or whatever for like 30 years, and then the person develops lung cancer, and then they mention what's the most important risk factor in this person developing lung cancer, it's going to be radiation exposure, right? And also remember, in certain places, if you live in basements and things like that, basements can expose you to like radon, right? Radon is actually the pretty important risk factors for lung cancer after smoking, right? And then again, obviously, if you've been exposed to like asbestos, that can also increase your risk of developing lung cancer. And then also do not forget secondhand smoke, right? So if you're around people that smoke a lot, that can also increase your risk of having lung cancer, right? So the thing is, lung cancer, one other thing our friends at the MBME love to test with it is screening, right? So how do we screen people for lung cancer? So remember, there were some old guidelines, but there are some much newer guidelines these days that actually kind of high yield to know, right? So the new guideline is you start at the age of 50, right? You start at the age of 50. Basically, if you have a person that has a 20-pack year smoking history, right? And they currently smoke or they've quit within the last 15 years, right? So let's say, for example, you're a 50-year-old guy and you quit smoking 10 years ago, right? You qualify for this, right? Or you're a 50-year-old guy and you currently smoke, you do qualify for this. But this also applies to women as well. This is not like a AAA where you only screen men and you don't screen women. For lung cancer, you also screen women. You screen men and women, right? So if you're a person that is between the ages of 50 to 80, you have like a 20-pack year smoking history. So you must have that 20-pack year smoking history, right? So if you smoked 2 packs of cigarettes every day for 5 years, you don't meet this criteria, right? So you must have had a 20-pack year smoking history, and you must either be smoking now or you quit like within the past 15 years, right? Then those people deserve an annual low-dose CT scan, right? They deserve an annual low-dose CT scan for lung cancer, right? But here's one unusual thing your friends at the NBME can do to you on the exam. Right? They can basically ask you about like, oh, let's say, for example, you have some person that is 55 years old, you know, the person qualifies for this screening, but then you notice that they have like pancreatic cancer, right? Some terminal malignancy. Should you continue to screen these people for lung cancer? The answer to that is no, right? So it's very high yield to know. Whenever a person has like a very poor prognostic healthcare lesion, then in general, screenings should stop in that person. Right? Screenings should stop in that person. And most times, those people are not going to be eligible for transplants, right? So let's say, for example, a person has like Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. It makes absolutely no sense to try to give those people new organs, right? So again, it's just one of these things. It kind of looks bizarre, but it's very high yield to know, especially for the more recent NBME exams, right? So now let's talk about the two general kinds of lung cancer, right? So remember, there are two general classes of lung cancer, right? There's going to be small cell, and then there's going to be non-small cell, right? There's going to be small cells, there's going to be non-small cell, right? So let's talk about small cell first, because it's a very high yield one, has many different paraneoplastic syndromes, right? So it's kind of high yield to know, right? So small cell lung cancer, the classic thing they'll tell you on your exam is that one, it's a central lesion. That's very important. And then the second thing that they will also tell you on your exam is that the person, when they do a biopsy of the lesion, they're going to see small round blue cells. You need to commit this to memory. If you see the term small round blue cells from the lungs, I want you to absolutely think about small cell lung cancer, right? Remember, there's this mnemonic for the lung cancers that are central, right? Central are the small cell and squamous cell. You see, they have S in their name, small cell, squamous cell, central, right? So those things are centrally located in the lungs, right? So small cell lung cancer, key things you want to know about it. Again, first things first, you want to know for sure, again, that those are small round blue cells. I'm telling you, even on step 2, CK step 3, that is a factoid that they absolutely still test. You do need to know this stuff for the exam. And then another thing they love you to know about small cell lung cancer is that your only treatment option available for small cell lung cancer is chemotherapy, right? Small cell lung cancer does not, basically radiation is not going to do squat for you, right? Surgery is not going to do squat for you on NBME exams, right? Because the thing is, when a person is diagnosed with small cell lung cancer, it's already stage 4, right? Lung cancer is, small cell lung cancer when diagnosed is considered to be stage 4 at diagnosis. Right? So in general, you only do chemotherapy for small cell lung cancer. Now, what are some other high yield things to keep in mind with small cell lung cancer? Well, the big thing to know is the paraneoplastic syndromes, right? So they can give you a question about a person that has like a lung nodule, and then they tell you that the person has been gaining weight, and the person has like skin hyperpigmentation, person has purple striae on their skin, right? They may even have signs and symptoms of hyperaldosteronism, because remember, cortisol can work like aldosterone, right? So they may have like signs and symptoms of hyperaldosteronism. They may have like elevated blood pressures. They may have hypokalemia. They may have metabolic alkalosis, right? If you see all those things, I would really hope you're thinking about ectopic ACTH production, right? Remember, that's the ACTH that does not suppress with high-dose dexamethasone therapy, right? That's one of, remember, when a person has small cell lung cancer and they're producing ACTH in a paraneoplastic fashion, that ACTH is basically, that's like an ACTH dependent cause of hypercortisolism, right? So again, this one, unlike Cushing's disease, it does not, the cortisol will not suppress with high dose dexamethasone administration, right? So if you see that, if you see a person having lung cancer and having osteoporosis, I really, really want you to think about small cell lung cancer, right? And the fact that the person is making a ton of ectopic ACTH, right? And then remember, another classic one is they can give you a question about a person that has, you know, a lung nodule and the person has hyponatremia, right? If you see that, that should really get you thinking about SIDH, right? SIDH. SIDH, right? So if you have SIDH, ADH's job is to cause you to reabsorb a ton of water, from free water from your urine, right? So those people's urine will be very concentrated. It will have a high urine specific gravity, right? But their serum osmolarity will be really low. And remember, we'll treat SIDH with fluid restriction, right? And then remember, they can also give you a question about a person that has a lung nodule. And then they will tell you something about the person having trouble combing their hair or climbing upstairs or being able to get their, like, abduct their arm, right? That tells you that these people have proximal muscle weakness, right? Or they may tell you that, oh, this person, they go for repetitive nerve stimulation, and you notice that they get an incremental response, right? So it's almost like as you keep stimulating the nerves, their muscle weakness just keeps getting better, right? Or after a few tries, their muscle weakness gets better. If you see something like that, I want you to think about Lambert-Eaton myasthenic syndrome, right? Lambert-Eaton myasthenic syndrome. Remember, in this paraneoplastic syndrome, the thing that's happening is that you're making autoantibodies against the presynaptic voltage-gated calcium channel, right? Presynaptic voltage-gated calcium channel. Again, those are the three paraneoplastic syndromes associated with small cell lung cancer, right? So ectopic ACTH production, SIDH, right? And the production of those presynaptic voltage-gated calcium channel antibodies, right? So that's the big thing with small cell lung cancer. And remember, again, they may put some tumor markers there. Remember, these things, you know, they tend to stain very nicely for like neuron-specific enolase or like chromogranin A. Those are just things to keep in mind. And sometimes they may have some gene amplifications, like the MYC gene amplification. Actually, there are drugs that target those pathways, right? But those are largely beyond the scope of the USMLE exams. And then, if we're going into the world of non-small cell lung cancer, the big, big, big one you want to keep in mind is squamous cell cancer of the lungs, right? Squamous cell cancer of the lungs. The big thing you want to keep in mind with squamous cell lung cancer is the fact that it loves to form cavities. Squamous cell lung cancer loves to cavitate, right? And again, it's a central lesion. It loves to cavitate. And the big thing they will tell you on biopsies that you're seeing keratin, right? If you see keratin, or they talk about these intracellular bridges, right? You want to think about squamous cell lung cancer. And many times these people, they can actually present with like altered mental status, severe abdominal pain, and things like that, right? And like neuropsych symptoms from hypercalcemia, right? Because remember, squamous cell lung cancer, many times in a paraneoplastic fashion, is going to produce PTHRP, right? Remember, PTHRP is parathyroid hormone-related peptide, right? So that PTHRP, the thing it does is it pretty much works like PTH, right? So it's going to raise these people's blood calcium levels, and it's going to trash their phosphate, right? So they're going to have low levels of phosphorus. But remember that these people's endogenous PTH will be low, right? Because remember, PTHRP, even if it acts like PTH, is not the same thing as PTH. So that hypercalcemia they have is going to cause a reduction in their endogenous PTH as a form of negative feedback, if you may, right? So that's something you definitely want to keep at the back of your mind for exams. That's pretty much as you need to know with squamous cell lung cancer, right? And then the other ones, if they give you a question about lung cancer in a person that has never smoked or in a female, right? One thing I will encourage you to really think about is adenocarcinoma, right? It's going to be a peripheral lesion. In fact, adenocarcinoma is the most common kind of lung cancer. I'll say that again. Adenocarcinoma is the most common kind of lung cancer, right? Because many people, just because we talk about small cell and squamous cell so much, they think that, oh, adenocarcinoma must be a distant third. The answer to that is no. Adenocarcinoma is actually the most common kind of lung cancer, right? And it's the one that actually has, it's going to be peripheral, right? So you see, it doesn't have that S sounding name, right? It's going to be peripheral. And the thing is, one thing about adenocarcinoma sometimes is it likes to grow around the walls of the alveoli, right? That's something called a lepidic, L-E-P-I-D-I-C. Believe it or not, that's a term you could see on your exam. That's a lepidic growth pattern, right? That's something we see many times with adenocarcinoma, right? And because it's an adenocarcinomatous lesion, right? Many times this thing can produce a ton of mucin, right? So if they tell you that the person has like a lung malignancy and you do a biopsy and you see like a ton of mucinous material, right? A lot of PAS positive material. I really want you to think about adenocarcinoma, right? And again, many times adenocarcinoma has this association with a paraneoplastic syndrome, although this is not just specific to adenocarcinoma. You may find this specific paraneoplastic syndrome with small cell lung cancer and squamous cell lung cancer. And that's this factor they can give you, like, oh, some guy that has smoked for a long time, and then over the last 3-4 weeks, he has developed like digital clubbing, and he has like pain in his fingers, and he has like pain in his joints. If you see stuff like that, I absolutely want you to think about something called hypertrophic pulmonary osteoarthropathy, right? Hypertrophic pulmonary osteoarthropathy, right? It's a paraneoplastic syndrome that's associated with lung cancer. Many times, if a person has those symptoms and they smoked, and they ask you for your next best step on an exam, you want to go ahead and get some kind of chest imaging, like a chest x-ray or a chest CT, to find that lung cancer that they have, right? And remember, adenocarcinoma many times tends to have these gene mutations like KRAS. Remember, we find KRAS mutations in colon cancer as well, right? But it also has these EGFR mutations, these ALK, ALK mutations, right? Those are just things you want to be able to recognize on an exam, right? So again, very high yield to keep these things in mind. And then just to kind of wrap up the other types of lung cancer, I mean, there's like large cell cancer. This one is, again, also going to be in the periphery of the lungs, right? So just something to keep in mind for exams. Now, one other thing I would say is there are some things that can happen with lung cancer that, you know, you kind of want to know for an NBM examiner. So what if they give you a question about a person? Person has like a history of lung cancer. And you notice that, wow, this person has like over the like a few days, they have like JVD developing, pain in their hands, swelling, bulging of their face. If you see that, you want to think about superior vena cava syndrome, SVC syndrome, right? SVC syndrome is most commonly associated with small cell lung cancer, right? So again, the cancer is involving the superior vena cava, right? So everything that drains into the SVC, is bulging, right? Because things are backing up in them, right? And the way we treat SVC syndrome on NBM exams is actually with radiotherapy, right? It's actually with radiotherapy. And then another thing that could happen, right? They can give you a person that has like unilateral papillary meiosis, right? And then they will tell you that they have like this like neuropathy in their upper extremities. If you see that, I really, really want you to think about a Pancoast tumor. Remember, Pancoast tumors are most commonly associated with squamous cell lung cancer, right? So Pancoast tumors, right? Those Pancoast tumors, they are compressing those nerve fibers that are going to the superior cervical ganglia, right? So because they are compressing those nerve fibers, right, they can cause a Horner syndrome. Remember, in Horner syndrome, you're going to see ptosis, meiosis, and anhidrosis, right? So again, SVC syndrome, you do need to know about. Pancoast tumors, you need to know about. And remember, sometimes, right, these cancers can get so big, they can involve the recurrent laryngeal nerve. So if they give you a question about a person that has lung cancer and is having like swallowing difficulties, or the person is having like hoarseness, right? They're having like, you know, like hoarse speech. If you see stuff like that, I really want you to think about a problem potentially with the recurrent laryngeal nerve, right? So the big thing I want to say then is, how do we diagnose lung cancer? In general, CT, 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 CT scan. Get that CT scan. It'll help you better characterize the mass, right? And then most times, if you want to do a biopsy, the biopsy method you choose depends on what kind of malignant, what kind of lesion you have, right? So if you have like a central lesion, you're going to do either a bronchoscopy or you're going to do a mediastinoscopy with biopsy, right? But if it's a peripheral lesion, you're going to call interventional radiology or interventional pulmonology to do a percutaneous CT-guided biopsy, right? So that's how you do those things, right? And again, remember, when you're doing a biopsy, you want to go above the margin of the rib, right? Because you want to avoid that intercostal vein, artery, and nerve bundle, right? So it's kind of high yield to keep those things in mind. And one thing I will also say is, if they tell you that, oh, you get a chest x-ray or chest CT, and you notice popcorn calcifications in the lungs, that's very high yield. Popcorn calcifications in the lungs, you want to think about a hematoma. A hematoma is a completely benign lesion, right? So the thing is, if, for example, a person has lung cancer and you need to resect their lungs, what do you need to do before you send them to the OR? The thing you need to do on an NBM exam is you need to get their FEV1. You need to do pre-op PFTs. Their FEV1 has to be greater than 1.5 liters. If it's less than 1.5 liters, that's a contraindication to these people getting surgery, right? And another thing to also keep in mind with staging of lung cancers is, if a person has a lung cancer and they have a pleural effusion, and in that pleural effusion, say you do a thoracentesis, you find malignant cells, that's stage 4 lung cancer. Once you can find cancer cells in a pleural effusion, that's stage 4 lung cancer, because it means that those things have gotten into lymphatic vessels, right? It means those things have gotten into lymphatic vessels, right? And most times, if you want to evaluate after, let's say you've done like the CT, you've done the biopsy, and you want to evaluate for Mets, the best thing to do on an NBM exam is to get a PET scan, right? The best thing to do on an NBM exam is to get a PET scan. So I think I'm going to go ahead and pause here. Again, I know some people may be like, oh, Devon, you didn't talk about the algorithm for a solitary pulmonary nodule, blah, 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 blah. To be honest with you, all those things do not matter for the most part for the USMLE exams, right? So I'm just focusing on things that are high yield and important. This is a very high yield, very high level podcast. And I can pretty much promise you, you will see a question or two on this stuff when you're taking your USMLE exams. Again, as I do at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams. Step 1, Step 2 CKA, Step 3, preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. And then if you're interested in help with your ERAS application, just shoot me an email through the website. Again, I've worked with tons of people that have matched into many disciplines, derm, neurosurgery, plastic surgery, general surgery, IM, family med, people that have failed USMLE exams. I've worked with and are now residents, right? So again, I have a lot of experience with this process. I can really touch up your application and make it what it needs to be, right? And then I have all these podcasts on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Spotify, at least the most recent 150. It's a WordPress rule. If you want all the podcasts from episode 1 all the way to, I guess, 331, which is this one I'm making, then you need to go on the website and find just type in episode 1 and it will come up as a search. Right. And then on the website, I have this thing called exam topics list. If you go and click on that, it will lead you to a Google spreadsheet that shows you for each USMLE exam broken down by topic and podcast you should listen to. So let's say you want to study internal medicine for step 2 CK, step 3. You go to the step 2 CK column and you'll see under internal medicine, you'll see some things that I definitely recommend that you should consider reviewing. Right. And then I have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention USMLE Podcast and Videos. If you go on that, if you go there, you'll find the videos that I have made. And then another thing I'll also say is that, if you go on the website, divineinterventionpodcast.com, I do actually have, if you subscribe to the website, you'll get an email notification whenever I make a new podcast. And again, don't forget about the course, the Step 2 CK Step 3 Review course I have coming up next week, and the MBME Test Taking Strategies course. And then finally, for those that love my life lessons, I've actually started like a unique life lessons website. It's called divineinterventionlifelessons.com. I even have the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Divine Intervention Life Lessons. And you can learn a ton from those podcasts. They are like life lessons, they are Bible-based teachings, and they are all less than 10 minutes. I've made 10 episodes so far, and I, hope to make a few pretty much every week. So thank you for listening to me today. I'll see you next time. Have a wonderful day. God bless you. Thank you.